Have you ever experienced church hurt or what might be called spiritual abuse? Tragically, so many people have. What exactly is church hurt or spiritual abuse? Why does it matter and what can be done about it? We're going to look at that today as we continue our dive into the Old Testament book of Nehemiah. Stay tuned.
If your desire is to become spiritually stronger, emotionally healthier, and relationally smarter, you're at the right place. Speaker and writer Stephanie Smith inspires and equips you to achieve these three key aims. If you're a parent, you'll also learn how to raise empowered kids ready for adulthood. Let's get started.
Welcome back, and thanks so much for being with me today. I am thrilled that you are here as we are continuing our walk through the Old Testament book of Nehemiah. There is nothing more important and valuable that you can invest in than the study of God's Word, because it is living and active, and it contains the guidelines that we need for life, the principles that we need to live this one beautiful, amazing life that we have. Well, doesn't mean that it's always easy to find answers to everything. Some things are right there, just kind of on the surface that we can pick up, and other things require deep digging, like mind level digging. One of the things that we see here in this fifth chapter of the book of Nehemiah is what we can relate to today when we talk about church hurt and even spiritual abuse. I use these words with great caution because words matter. Our labels that we put on people or institutions have a very real impact. I'm not a big fan of how we're throwing around the word toxic these days. You know, there's toxic cultures and toxic people, and it seems to me that in many ways that has become an easy out to just deal with difficult people. Let's just label them toxic, and then we don't have to deal with them. Absolutely, I know that there are truly what we should call toxic people, toxic cultures, toxic institutions. However, we do want to be mindful that we use those words with great care and with diligence. It's also the same thing when it comes to the term spiritual abuse and church hurt. And this is where we do need to be thinking in terms of a continuum. It's not just a fixed place like on a number line. It ranges in levels of intensity and how people experience different things. I also think we need to be cautious that we make the distinction between church hurt and an individual, the hurt that individuals cause. You know, again, our words and our labels matter. And when we classify every single person as part of the church and we talk about church hurt, and we're not careful to distinguish with individual churches, with individuals themselves, then we do this, we can engage in this part to whole fallacy. Now, if you're not familiar with a part-to-whole fallacy, what that is where you take something that is true in one situation, and then you expand it to say it's true for the whole thing. It's the old-style equivalent of labeling the entire basket of apples as bad because there's one bad apple in the bunch. And so we want to be careful as we're talking about church hurt and spiritual abuse that when we say things like, well, in the church, because what are we really talking about? We're talking about the body of Christ, and that is made up of individuals. We want to be careful that we don't paint any group of people, whether we categorize them by race, by ethnicity, by political affiliation, or by religious affiliation, with this broad brush that says, well, if you're a Christian, you're part of the church, and then that means that you are guilty of church hurt. So I think that we want to be mindful of the language that we use. But because we are at this point in our culture where we are talking a lot about church hurt and about spiritual abuse. I'm going to use those terms, but again, I use those with the caveat that we want to be mindful about the language that we use because it does make a difference. You know, I know what it is to experience what would be called spiritual abuse or church hurt. I've had that happen in my life, and I had that happen in some very significant ways. In ways that had I not had a strong faith that was grounded in my personal relationship with God, could have caused me to walk away from the church, to walk away just also even from God. And even though today I'm sharing about this from our study in the book of Nehemiah, I have experienced this personally, and I do know what it is like to experience betrayal and abuse and manipulation from people who are in or were in positions of leadership within a church and also within a Christian organization. One of those stories I share a little bit about in my message, Why God, Trusting When Answers Don't Come. And I'm not going to go into that in today's podcast, but I do want to make that clear that I understand from a firsthand experience, not just from some theoretical or Bible teaching method, what it is to experience church hurt and why it is so important that we address this. In the fifth chapter of Nehemiah, it changes course a little bit. Up until this point, we have the backstory of Nehemiah and how he comes to have this mission to return to the city of Jerusalem and to lead the rebuilding of the walls of that city. And it takes an abrupt change here in chapter 5, where all of a sudden it shifts to what's going on within the Jewish community that lives there near Jerusalem. And what we see is happening is the modern day equivalent of spiritual abuse or church hurt. Nehemiah has been dealing with all of these external enemies and problems that have come from without, and we've talked at length about those in some of the previous podcasts. But what we hear today is that the people come to Nehemiah and they begin telling what's been going on in their own community, not what outsiders have been doing to them, but what their own leaders and nobles and officials have been doing to them. Now, even though all of these people were not acting in a priestly capacity, they were still acting in a capacity of leadership that would have been interpreted as these are people who are leaders under God's authority. These were people who, although they did not have priestly authority and privileges and responsibilities, they still were entrusted with the shepherding of God's people. And they still had a responsibility to care for them, to look out for them, to use their positions of leadership for the benefit of the people and not just for the benefit of themselves. But they have been doing what leadership does and what it will do by default. And we see that from time, just going back through all recorded history across all cultures. Power by default will lead to abuse. Unless there are provisions in place that prevent that from happening, that will be the natural occurrence. And that's exactly what we see that has happened here in this city of Jerusalem. And it's really tragic that it's happening at this particular time because this city is in devastation. This city has no way to defend itself. These people are exiled. They are living under the control of a foreign government. You would think that if at any time people would rally together and look out for themselves, it would be in a situation like this. That is exactly not what happens. One of the mistakes we do not want to make in life is thinking that just because we and other people around us have a shared vulnerability, that we're all going to be looking out for each other. That is also not human nature. By default, people are going to look out first and foremost for themselves. And unless there is something that is different about them in the heart, or there are external structures in place that keep that in check, that's just going to be what happens, and that's exactly what we see here. What has been going on is that the leaders and the nobles have been manipulating and taking advantage and abusing people economically. They have been using their position to gain wealth and economic security for themselves, while they have made their own countrymen more economically disadvantaged and vulnerable. Some families have even had to go so far as to have their children go into slavery, into different forms of indentured servitude, just in order to be able to pay the tax that was demanded either by the leaders or by the king. People are increasingly in a position of economic dependency, and make no mistake, when the majority of a population is economically dependent, they are at tremendous risk for manipulation and abuse by the powers that be. As Christians, we do need to be concerned about the economic situations and circumstances and policies and practices, because it has a very real impact in how people are able to live. And that's exactly one of the things that we see that's going on here. Well, when Nehemiah hears what has been taking place, and this has been going on long before he has come onto the scene. Remember, he's only been there a very short time. He's only been there a matter of a couple of months. He hasn't been there for years and years. And up until now, he's been so focused on what needs to happen for these walls to be rebuilt, he's not even been aware of all this other stuff that has been going on. And it's not a matter that he has failed as a leader to not understand this. I think it's more likely that the people had been living with this system in place for so long, and they had learned that their leaders were just going to turn a deaf ear to their complaints and their concerns and their problems. And Nehemiah shows up, and hey, this guy has come from serving in the cabinet of the king. I mean, why is he going to care about what's happening to us down here? Nehemiah had to earn their trust by how he handled the ongoing opposition that they were experiencing externally, in order for the people to trust that he would care about the abuse and betrayal that they were experiencing internally. He had earned their trust through his actions, not just his promises or his claims. When he hears what's happening, he's angry. And this is an important part for us to understand, is that he takes a pause between his hearing about it and his emotional response of anger and his action that he does take. In speaking, there's what is known as the power of the pause. And this is also a principle that's very effective also just in speaking to your kids. But in public speaking, it's a matter of knowing when you need to pause and you need to let your audience absorb something that you've just said. Because if you don't give people time to do that, they can miss out on something that's very important and very meaningful. Well, Nehemiah takes a pause between his anger and his action. And isn't that just a good practice for all of us to listen to and to put into our own life? When we are angry, give pause between our anger, the emotion of anger, and our taking action. And what specifically does he do? He says he takes counsel with myself. That's what he does. He takes the time to step out of the situation and to think things through. I mean, we could just have a whole podcast. If you don't take anything else away from today's episode, but that, take that away, because that is powerful. Anger needs to be given its place, but it also needs to be given a pause. He doesn't deny his anger, but what he does is he says, I'm going to take pause. I'm going to stop. I'm going to think this through before I act. So he he responds, he doesn't just react. And there are four things that Nehemiah does that we can also apply in our own lives. Not only in terms of trying to combat and to prevent and to deal with when there is spiritual abuse or abuse in any kind of leadership role that we are in or that we are a part of in our community. The first thing that Nehemiah does is he confronts the leaders, the nobles and officials, with their wrongdoing. And he summarizes all of this very, very succinctly. He says, "You are exacting interest, each from his brother." Now, at face value, that doesn't seem like a big deal, okay? I mean, you give some or you loan somebody money, what's wrong with charging them interest? Well, there's a couple of things for this. One is that in the Old Testament law, God had specifically said, you cannot do this. If you lend somebody money, you can lend them money, but you cannot tack interest on to the top of that. The other thing that they're doing here is they're manipulating and they're taking advantage of people who are in a position of economic dependence and vulnerability. They're preying on their own brothers. And Nehemiah confronts these leaders in a public way. He doesn't just take them to a quiet meeting in a conference room with closed doors and no recordings and nobody's keeping notes and says, okay, I'm just going to have a private conversation with these people. He holds a great assembly. Basically, anybody and everybody is invited to come, and he makes the charges public. Why does he do this? Because what is happening is affecting the public. This isn't a private matter between two individuals. Yes, the abuse is happening at an individual level, but it is affecting the entire community. He's not calling people out to humiliate them. He is addressing the significance of the impact of their behaviors and their decisions. He is saying, what you guys are doing individually and in private is having an impact on everybody in the community. This isn't just a person-to-person issue. This is a person-to-community issue. And that's why he makes this public. He also wants everyone to understand where he stands on this. The people aren't confused because Nehemiah says, okay, thank you all for coming and talking to me about this. I'm going to go talk to the leaders and I'll address this. And then the people are just left knowing, thinking, we don't have any clue what's going on, what you're going to say. Maybe you're going to be a part of this. What's their response going to be? He says, we are going to have total transparency with this. And he understands that the people know, the people must trust him. Remember, he's only been there for a very short period of time. And it might be easy for us to think that Nehemiah has no skin in this game. There's nothing he's risking here. But that is absolutely not the case. Even though he has the king's backing and God has called him to this mission, he's not invincible. He cannot build the walls by himself. He needs the cooperation of others. And this is going to include the leaders. Confronting these leaders, those who were holding the economic power, was risky for him. It wasn't just a matter that he was sailing into this situation and saying, hey, y'all are wrong over there. He was at risk if the leaders all got together and decided to take action against him. Remember, he's already dealing with serious external threats. I mean, even the possibility of a military campaign coming against him any day now. And it would have been easy for Nehemiah to have said, you know what, I'll deal with this later. Let's get the walls done, and then we'll come back and address this and deal with this. I mean, in a lot of ways, it could have made total sense for him to have said, hey, let's prioritize. We're going to do the walls. Let's procrastinate. Let's just put this on the shelf over here. We'll come back and deal with this later. He does not do that. And it's incredibly important for us to understand that just because we have serious external issues and problems and threats going on in our life, in a church, in an organization, in a culture, that does not mean that we procrastinate putting off dealing with the in-house issues that we have. We have to address those as they come up, because the threats to what God wants to do in our lives, in our churches, in our organizations, don't just come from external sources. They also can come from bad practices inside. The other response that Nehemiah could have had was he could have just blown it off and said, hey, you know what? This isn't my department. I'm here to oversee the rebuilding of the walls. I'm not a part of this. Y'all have had these economic issues going on for quite a while. Sorry, you're going to have to find somebody else who's going to, you know, take care of that for you. He doesn't do that. Nehemiah shows his courage, not just in how he has dealt with the external threats, but he shows courage in how he's dealing with what's going on in-house. So again, number one, what does he do? He confronts the leaders, and he does that in a timely way. He doesn't procrastinate and put that off. The second thing that we see that Nehemiah does is he commands the leaders to correct the situation. He's very specific and thorough. Basically, in summary, he says, give their fields, their vineyards, their money back and stop collecting it. And he's very specific, so there's no wiggle room for people to say, oh, well, you didn't include this, and so we thought it was okay. No. He's thorough, and he commands the leaders to correct the situation. He doesn't just confront them about what they've been doing wrong. He says, now correct the situation, and here's how you're going to correct it. Again, this is important, not just for the leaders to understand what they need to be doing, but for the people to understand what is being expected of the leaders who have messed up. This is an important role and an important part when it comes to church hurt or any kind of leadership abuse. People who are left in the dark, that is never going to go well. There needs to be complete transparency. People don't need to be left wondering what's going on behind closed doors, or, okay, people have told us that the leaders are going to have to take action to correct the situation or whatever, but nobody knows what that is. Nehemiah is totally transparent, absolutely clear. Everybody understands exactly what is going to be required of these leaders to demonstrate that they are willing to correct what they have been doing that has been wrong and that has been incredibly hurtful to the people they're supposed to be taking care of. The third step that Nehemiah takes is that he compels accountability. Now, this is also an incredibly important principle here. He doesn't stop by just confronting the leaders and then going off and leaving them and thinking, okay, well, they've been confronted with their wrongdoing. Now they're going to change that. No, he confronts them and then he commands with specifics what they need to do to correct the situation. And then he compels accountability. He calls in the priests and he makes the leaders swear an oath before God through the priest that they will follow through on what they've said they're going to do. He doesn't just listen to them say, oh, yeah, we're going to do that. You're right, Nehemiah. We've been wrong. We're going to return their fields and their money, and we're not going to engage in these practices anymore. Nehemiah says, okay, there's got to be more to it than just this. There has to be accountability. It's one thing to make a promise, especially in public or in front of others. It's another thing to follow through in private. And Nehemiah provides accountability that is also public. It's not this private accountability. It's not a matter that the leaders say, oh, you're right, we're going to do this. And then behind closed doors, we're going to set up an accountability system. Again, I'm not saying that all issues where there has been a breakdown or betrayal by leadership need to be held in an entirely public way. There are times, especially when something has been done wrong to an individual, and the impact of that behavior is only at the individual level. Well, you don't go out and announce that to the entire congregation in your church. But when the impact, even when the behavior has been done with one individual, when the impact is to the community, then it is before the community that there needs to be clarity about what's going to be done and how a person is going to be held accountable. And that's what we see that Nehemiah does here, is he compels accountability. He doesn't just leave it up to the leaders to say, okay, yep, we're going to follow through and do this. And then he says, okay, all right, well, we're all going to trust you on this. He says, no. You're going to have some accountability, and it's going to be public accountability, and it's going to be through the priest. And basically, you're not just making a commitment here to your fellow Jewish people. You're making an oath before God about what you're going to do. And the last thing that we see that Nehemiah does is he calls on God to be the ultimate vindicator. Now, hear me on this point. This is Nehemiah's last step. It is not his first. And I think it's important that we understand this, because his calling on God to be the ultimate vindicator is not an excuse to not take the other steps he's taken. He has confronted them publicly. He has given a command about how the situation is to be rectified, and he has compelled accountability. And after he has done all of those things, after everything has been done that can humanly be possible to do, then he adds to that by saying, God, if these people don't do what they've said they're going to do in some kind of sneaky way that you're going to know about, but we may not know about, then this is what we're going to pray happens, that you will be the ultimate vindicator here of doing what is right. Basically says, you know, that they would just be, God would deal with them in a way that they would lose their position, not just in the community, but they would be shaken out of the entire nation. Again, this is not an excuse to not do what humanly they had the capacity to do. You know, people will default, and people in positions of power and leadership will always default to serving themselves unless they have the character that compels them, not just externally, but compels them internally, to use those positions in service of others and not for themselves. Those are the kinds of people who do not mind, but who will ask for and welcome, and not just accept in a, okay, well, I guess if I have to, but will themselves even want to put into practice external structures that hold them accountable, that keep them transparent. Those people aren't going to mind having those things in place to begin with. And if they do, that's a red flag, not just about what somebody may be doing or has been doing, but it's a red flag about somebody's character and where that might eventually lead. If you're in a church or an organization or institution of any kind, these are four specific things, steps that can be taken when there is abuse of leadership, when there's betrayal of any kind. It is to confront the leaders. And the more public their behavior, the more public their impact of their behavior. It doesn't even have to be that their behavior is public, but if the impact of their behavior is public, then the confrontation should be more public. They should be commanded on how they're going to correct the situation, not just left to figure it out for themselves or to determine for themselves how the situation is going to be corrected. Basically, these people had to be willing, these leaders had to be willing to come under the leadership of Nehemiah. And that's something that we can see is someone who is truly repentant, which is very different from being remorseful. Are they willing to come under the authority and the leadership of someone else, and it's not someone that they've picked? And then the third practice is, again, is to compel accountability. Are people willing to be held truly accountable in an open, transparent kind of way? And then lastly, what we can do is that we can call upon God to be the ultimate vindicator, that things that we may not see, we may not be able to be aware of at a human level, but to entrust that God will set right. I hope, my friend, that you have not experienced spiritual abuse or church hurt or betrayal of leaders in any organization, community, whether it has been religious or it has been secular. But the fact of the matter is, sooner or later, we do experience this either directly, or we have someone that we know experience, or we're even made aware of it because we know that this happens and we hear about and read about the fallout of this in other places. And all of it ends up having an impact on us. But we're not just left to say we have no idea how to deal with these things or how to even prevent these things. Nehemiah shows us here in this fifth chapter of exactly how the steps that can be taken to deal with these kind of situations when they occur so that they stop happening. And people who have been betrayed and have been taken advantage of can experience the ending of that practice, and they can be empowered into being able to live the lives and to have the economic independence that God has designed and desires for us to have. Hey, I'm going to ask you to do a couple of things today. First of all, would you leave a review for this podcast? That is a tremendous help for me and lets me know what you are finding valuable. And also, I want to invite you, share the podcast with two people. I'm sure you have two people that you know who maybe you know that they're podcast listeners. Maybe they're not, but this might be a way to say, hey, you know, there's this podcast here. I think it'd be worth your time. At least go check it out. Listen to, you know, three or four episodes. So you can kind of get a taste for it and just share that quickly with two people. And if you haven't already, then be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter, High Impact, on the website, stephaniepresents.com. All right, my friend. One of the reasons it's important for us to hold our leaders accountable and to hopefully do so in such a way that prevents abuse and betrayal from happening, but when it does happen, that we have a way to move forward and to know how to address it. And the reason, one of the reasons for that is because each of us have a life that is immeasurable, eternal, and irreplaceable. And we want to preserve the opportunity to make that impact entirely possible. Thank you so much for joining me, and I will look forward to being back with you next week. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening. Visit the website, stephaniepresents.com, and sign up for High Impact to join the mission of building spiritually strong, emotionally healthy, and relationally smart women and families. You can also book Stephanie to speak at your event and check out additional resources. Together, we can invite and equip generations to engage fully in God's grand story.